Thanks for coming, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I'd like to start by acknowledging my partners in crime, Jonathan Asani, Edward Ioannidis, and David Childers, who helped me with this paper. I'd also like to acknowledge funding that was received from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, to support these analyses. And finally, I don't have anything to disclose. So, how many people here text ever? Maybe I should have asked that the other way. How many have never texted? How many text 10 to 20 times a day? 20 to 50 times a day? While you're driving? Trick question. Okay. Well, to get us started, I thought we'd play a little cell phone trivial pursuit. How many of you know the year when the first text message was sent? Who can tell me? 1992. So it was sent from Neil Papworth to Richard Jarvis. And how many of you know what it said? And it wasn't vulgar, okay? No one knows? You guys are geekier than you look, you know? Actually, what it said was Merry Christmas. So, since 1999, there hasn't been much change in population. I mean, it's going up in the United States. But in comparison, we see essentially a linear, steep increase in the number of cell phone subscriptions in the United States. If we compare that, however, to the number of text messages sent, they're dwarfed. It's about 20 or 2,000 times greater, right? So lots and lots of text messages. So I think it's not a surprise then that we see it happening so often even on the road while people are driving. If we turn this put this on a different scale and look at it in a per person basis, we see that since 1999 we've converged on one cell phone per person in the population, and the number of texts per week increased until 2011. 2012 it dropped. You saw that on the previous slide. That caused a little panic in the markets, but people are sending about 7. Now, that doesn't sound like many until you consider that there probably aren't very many infants and toddlers out there texting, and on the other end of the population, there also isn't. So a lot of the text messaging is pushed into a very small or a relatively narrow span of the demographic. So text messaging while driving is a pretty bad thing. And to kind of illustrate this, I wanted to use some data from a study done at VTTI where they instrumented heavy trucks and light vehicles. They had cameras inside the cab. They had a lot of instrumentation on the vehicle. But what they one of the things they wanted to do was to see what the odds were, the odds of having a crash or a near crash while drivers were involved in a variety of different secondary tasks. Now, a crash, I think that's self-definable. Near crash is like there but by the grace of God kind of event. The very last minute, they do something to avoid the crash. So we see that there are actually some tasks that are associated with a reduced risk. And I think that's not surprising. And if we look at these tasks, the first hypothesis I have is that the tasks that people are involved in that are listed here probably raise attention a little bit. They keep people alert. They're not sitting there comatose, even though maybe they're not strictly focused on driving. There are a few tasks that are pretty neutral, don't have much of an effect. Drinking, eating, or two of those. But then we get into more complex tasks that involve both visual and manual aspects as well as a cognitive component. And we see that then the crash, the odds of a crash or near crash go up pretty fast. If we continue up the scale, we see the pattern continues. With more complexity, the risk of crash and near crash continues to increase. But then we look at text messaging, which I like to call the Pluto in the in the solar system of secondary tasks, because it is way out there from all the others. Much higher odds. So in response to this, a lot of states have tried various legislative strategies to tamp down cell phone use. We see on this map that there have been there are quite a few states that actually ban texting. For a lot of these states, it's universal. Some states, it's partial. They only ban texting, for example, in Texas, for people driving school buses or for teens. But in other states, it's everybody. These are the states that have specific laws pertaining to teens and texting. And the question is, are they effective? In 2010, the Highway Loss Data Institute conducted a study in four states where they looked at crash rates pre and post restriction. And what they found was that actually the crash rate increased after the restriction went into effect. That was most evident for the youngest drivers, maybe because they do the most texting, but also maybe because they're the youngest and least experienced drivers and at highest risk anyway. But in any case, they hypothesized that what was going on was that after the restriction, people continued to text at the same rate, but they did it in a manner that was more clandestine, and that increased the complexity of the task, took their eyes off the road more often and for longer, and increased the crash rate as a result. However, and I apologize to these authors if they're in the room, I apologize even if they're not, because I screwed this slide up. They published this paper actually in 2014 in the American Journal of Public Health. Got this a little backwards. Got it mixed up with the next slide actually. But what they found was that looking at all the states in the U.S., they found that in those that had a universal texting ban, there was a small increase or a reduction in risk for the youngest drivers. And that in states with a teen-specific ban, that benefit was better. It was greater. It was about 11%. Ferdinand et al., they actually published their paper in 2013 in the American Journal of Economics, not the American Journal of Public Health, looked at states with bans, but specifically looked only at single vehicle, single occupant crashes. So it was a very specific subset of crashes. What they found is that universal bans were effective unless they came along with a clause that only allowed secondary enforcement, in which case they were not effective. But I think, you know, that the real sad message here, and one that's been supported by observational studies in other states, is that the effect of the law, the positive effect, only lasted for a few months, and then it went away. So the current study is an evaluation of Michigan's texting ban. It's a universal ban. It applies to drivers of all ages. It went into effect in 2010, and it's a fairly strong ban. It bans any kind of text messaging that you can think of, and it does have a primary enforcement clause. I'm assuming people know what primary enforcement is. You know, the police can pull them over just for the texting, okay? We did an interrupted time series analysis. We had a series of data from 2005 to 2010. We adjusted our models for the number of licensed drivers per age, gasoline prices, and unemployment rates in the state. And we had a within-state comparison. They were the oldest drivers, 65 and older. We assumed that they were probably impacted the least by the texting ban because they generally text the least. We also did something else that was a little different than the previous studies. and that was to look at all crashes and divide them by severity. So we looked at the fatal and disabling, separate from non-disabling, separate from the possible injury, property damage only crashes, which of course have no public health impact. The results, I think, were not surprising to us. For the fatal and disabling injury, what we found was that most of the effects were not significant. Those that were significant were in the wrong direction. They actually indicated an increase in crash rate and slope. When we looked at non-disabling injury, it was very similar. Effects that were significant were in the wrong direction, but we had a lot of non-significance. Finally, for the property damage only crashes, the law seems to work. We see a decrease here in crash incidents. But, of course, we really don't care about these crashes. So, takeaway messages. I think, you know, overall, my conclusion is that the Michigan texting ban does not have an effect. I would say that if it does have any effect, for the worst crashes, it has the wrong effect, and it has the intended effect only for the least severe. So it's not really, you know, it's, but these aren't feel-good findings, basically. So, you know, the safety impact of the law is limited, as I said. It may have iatrogenic effects, but there are some caveats here. We did not, for example, collect observational data of texting pre and post the law. And we also didn't, we have no idea of the level of enforcement or how much public education went into this. So having lived in Michigan through this period, I can say I'm not aware of a single public service announcement relating to this law. I may have just missed them. I don't watch TV, so that could be a problem. But also talking with police, and this is anecdotal, texting is a very low priority on the list, and effectively what happens is that they enforce it as though it were a secondary law because it's not worth their time to pull people over just for texting. But if they were texting and they get pulled over for speeding, then they'll get the citation. I think the bigger picture, the take-home message, is that texting is only one source of many sources of distraction. It's been hyped way up, and maybe that's good. It's certainly important. But I think the bigger picture here, and we really started to see this in 2012 when texting rates started to drop, is that this technology, like every other sexy technology, is going to be replaced by another sexy technology. It may or may not be as distracting as this. It may be worse. But really, what we should be concerned about in this line of research isn't texting per se, but distraction while driving, and that's really the core problem. Thank you, and please drive safely. Yes. Not if you're a teen. If you're under the age of 18, you cannot use your cell phone at all. But no one is supposed to be texting. There are some local jurisdictions that have outlawed all cell phone use, but I think I haven't heard that those are effective either. And, you know, it's, well, yeah, that's the answer to your question. I think that's true, but I think there are other caveats. I've also heard that it's hard to get these citations to stick because people will go to court and they'll say, I wasn't texting. I was talking on my cell phone. I was just looking to see what that message was. I wasn't going to text back. And so, yeah, unless we do something different, I don't think it's going to be effective. Yeah.
There's some early reports that the penalty, if I have a
And, you know, certainly applying deterrence theory is one approach here. However, we don't really have good data to prove that people aren't trying to be more clandestine to avoid laws when they get more serious, which could have a detrimental effect. So I always kind of encourage caution around just increasing the severity of the law, though it makes sense to do that. And I'm not surprised, yeah. That's a good question. I think in terms of the technology, we're there. We have the technology certainly to disable cell phones when the car's in motion. There was even one company that developed a technology that would apply that only to the driver so the passengers could actually still call. People hate it. They absolutely hate it. We did a study on this at Umtree for NHTSA. And what we found was everybody said, I hate this thing. If you weren't paying me, I wouldn't use it. I wouldn't allow it on my phone or in my car. And the other thing we found is they spent an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out how to get around the system. You know, if I make that phone call while I'm stopped, can I then drive and keep talking? You know, that kind of thing. So, I don't know.